kitchen, Elizabeth was reading the newspaper. She didn't look up when Rufus came in, but said, "There's a story here about albino frogs in the West Country. I shouldn't like that at all." Rufus said, "Sometimes there's toads in the garden here." He began to fiddle with the edge of Elizabeth's newspaper. She watched him for a bit and then said, "Is Dale upstairs?" He nodded. "Dale said she was going to live in her room again." "I know. She wants to put some of Lucas's junk in my room." "She can't do that," Elizabeth said. "Nobody's putting anything in your room that you don't want there." She was still looking at him very seriously. "Shall we go out?" she said. Rufus nodded. "Would you like to go and tell Daddy, then? We might decide to have lunch somewhere." "What about Daddy's lunch?" "Dale can do that." "Is Daddy cross?" Rufus said. "No," Elizabeth said. "It's not Daddy that's cross. I'm afraid it's me." The door to the Huntleys' farmhouse opened before Becky reached it. Mrs. Huntley, whom she'd never met, regarded her without smiling. "We wondered when you were coming." Becky swallowed.
"I've been looking after Mum."
Mrs. Huntley looked at her unbrushed hair and her long, grubby skirt. She said, as if making a concession, "You'd better come in." Inside, Becky said to Tim Huntley,
I don't know what happened."
Nadine had been wildly upset, she said, at hearing of Becky's running away, and she'd rung Tim. Tim shrugged now. "She was hysterical." Becky said nothing. "She was on the floor when I got there. When I tried to get her up, she went for me, so I slapped her. Then I took her upstairs. She was screaming all the way." He gave Becky a level look. "I put her on the bed. Then I rang the doctor." Becky said,
"She's better now."
Mrs. Huntley said,
"Who brought you? We saw a car."
Becky hesitated.
"My stepmother."
"That was good of her," Mrs. Huntley said.
Becky nodded. It had also been deeply disconcerting. Not so much the journey itself with the forced intimacy of being alone in a car together, but more when Josie had offered to come into the cottage with her.
"No," she said. "I'll come out if there's anything."
Josie had looked up at her out of the car window. "I'll wait." Becky had nodded. Then she'd gone up the path to the cottage's back door and up the stairs to find Nadine in bed with her eyes closed. It was only then she allowed herself to think she'd found what she dreaded to find. Nadine dead. Dead because Nadine now knew that somewhere deep in Becky, a weary disbelief was beginning to stir about all the things Nadine accused people of doing and saying. After that, it was awful. Nadine opened her eyes, and Becky couldn't stop screaming. And her screaming brought Josie running in from the car. And Nadine just went berserk. And there was a horrible, brawling scuffle that made Becky so ashamed she'd gone from screaming to utter silence in a second. Josie had managed at last to free herself, and Becky had followed her, despite Nadine's demands to her not to. They stood shaking by the car.
"You'd better come back with me," Josie said.
Becky shook her head.
"Look," Josie said. She was leaning against the car as if she couldn't quite stand up without its help. "I know any remark I make will sound like a criticism of your mother, but will you be safe?"
"Oh, yes," Becky said. She's never done anything like that before.
"But I can't leave you here like this alone with her. I must get a doctor or something."
"Okay." She stood in the road watching Josie slowly drive away. On the journey there, Josie had stopped for petrol. When she got back into the car, she handed Becky a packet of Marlboro Lights. She hadn't said anything, nor had Becky. When Josie's car was at last out of sight round a bend in the lane, Becky turned and went back into the cottage. Nadine was standing by the kitchen table. She said very clearly, as if she'd been planning it, "I'm very sorry about everything." When Becky got back from the Huntleys' farm, Nadine was sitting in the cottage garden. "How was that?"
Okay, Becky said. They asked how you were. I'm fine.
For now, Becky said.
No, I'm really fine now. I promise. Summer's coming.
You shouldn't live alone, Becky said.
What?
You heard me.
You can't cope.
Nadine turned on her a gaze full of distress.
Oh, Becky.
You can't, Becky said. And what? Nadine said, her voice sharp with apprehension.
And I can't live with you any more.
Not permanently.
I can't cope with you either.
I haven't got the job, Matthew said. He leaned in the kitchen doorway. They said because of my family circumstances, this wasn't a good moment for me to take on extra responsibility. The injustice of it.
I know, Josie said. I don't mean the injustice of not giving me the job. I mean the weaselly insinuation that my family circumstances are too much for me now, when they used to be far, far worse.
Josie took his hand and put it against her face.
Where are the children? He said.
Out, Josie said. Claire and Rory are next door, and Becky's gone to see a friend.
Is it any better since Becky came back?
It's quieter, Josie said.
Only that?
She looked down at her hands. Something had arisen in her mind during that drive back from Herefordshire, which she was not ready yet to tell Matthew about. Something had changed. Something in her perception of Matthew's children had altered. A small but powerful shift of emphasis. She thought often of Becky's face as she got out of the car outside Nadine's cottage, of Becky's figure dwindling in the driving mirror as she drove away after that hideous scene. She had not expected there to be a real, palpable reluctance between herself and Becky to part. You could give a dozen reasons for the reluctance, but still a glimmer of hope had flickered. After Matthew had gone upstairs to the attic, the door opened and Becky came in.
Is Dad back?
He's upstairs, Josie said.
I'll go up.
Becky, Josie said, would you do something for me first?
Becky eyed her.
What?
Would you go and get the others from next door?
Why?
I've got a reason. I wouldn't ask you if I hadn't.
Becky hovered uncertainly for a moment and then went out of the kitchen. When the outer door opened again, Josie said,
Thank you for coming back.
They all three looked at her.
I don't know if this is the right moment to say what I'm going to say, Josie said, but I'm afraid your father hasn't got his promotion.
They stared at her.
I don't need to tell you how he feels, but it's given me a chance to say some things I maybe couldn't say if nothing had happened. The thing is, she said in a rush, we don't have to be a disaster. Really, we don't. Some homes have always got broken, haven't they? I mean, somebody dies or somebody leaves. It's awful. It's always awful. Nobody's pretending that it isn't.
I don't know exactly what you've been through, except
my dad pushed off when I was 7, and I've never seen him since.
Becky was still staring at her.
Maybe, Josie said, we've got a sort of chance now. If we stop being afraid of being a step-family, that is. I know I'm not your mother. You've got a mother. But I could be your friend. We may be a different kind of family, but we don't have to be worse, do we?
Becky said, blurting the words out,
What about Mum?
Josie took a breath. She'll have to find a way. Like we all have to. She stood up slowly. You ought to go and see Matthew. He's the one in need right now.
Okay, Rory said.
Claire followed him. Becky stayed where she was. She opened her mouth to say something and closed it again. Then she said, gesturing awkwardly towards the kettle,
Would you like a coffee?
Dale's possessions almost filled the landing on the top floor. They were very orderly. Rufus's bedroom door was open, and inside lay Dale's television. And also, between the bed and the desk, a small mountain of the items out of Lucas's room. Lucas's room had been cleared in order to make way for the sofa from Dale's flat. Dale's own bedroom door was closed and locked. It had all happened in 5 days. Elizabeth had gone back to London on Sunday evening and had spoken to Tom several times throughout the working week. He had said nothing about Dale. Elizabeth hadn't been surprised. One of the agreements they had reached at the end of a long, difficult and distressing conversation about Dale was that Tom would indeed do something about her, but must be left to do that thing, whatever it was, in privacy. "I have to deal with Dale as I always have. Alone," Tom said. "If she can't trust me, I won't get anywhere. And she won't trust me if she thinks I'm relaying everything to you." On Friday night, when Tom, as usual, came to meet her at Bath Station, he looked tired. His manner was guarded. He said, trying to make light of it, "I'm afraid I'm not doing very well, but at least it's only temporary." "What do you mean?" "You'll see," he said. She went straight upstairs when they reached home. She knew what she'd find when she reached the top, and sure enough she found it. The unmistakable evidence of Dale's relentless purpose. She glanced at Rufus's room. The floor was almost obscured under a haphazard clutter of Lucas's splitting bags and broken boxes. The order that had prevailed among Dale's own possessions was plainly not a courtesy extended to anyone else's. Elizabeth ran into Rufus's room and began to seize the bags and boxes and randomly dump them anywhere. She started to throw things, hurling them out of the door, pictures and books, plastic sacks of clothes and bedding, a shoebox of old cassette tapes, a hockey stick, folders of photographs and letters. Then she grabbed skis and a tennis racket and, staggering out of the room with them, flung them, banging and thumping down the stairs. "What in hell's name is going on?" Tom said. Elizabeth chucked a final cushion. "What do you bloody think?" Tom stepped over a tennis racket and moved a ski from where it lay jammed crosswise across the staircase. "Sweetheart, Dale isn't living here," he said. "Please don't be so melodramatic. She's living with a friend. It's just that she's got nowhere to put anything until she finds the flat. So I said..." "Oh," Elizabeth cried. "Oh, I can imagine exactly what you said. You said all the reasonable, placatory, surrendering things you have so disastrously said to Dale for 20 years. What do you mean she isn't living here?" "She isn't." Elizabeth gestured wildly. "She's going to. Elizabeth, will you please listen to me? I've spoken to Dale as you requested, as we agreed, as you requested. And she asked if she might store things here until she finds a flat. It's only very temporary." "Ha," Elizabeth said. "What do you mean by that?" "I mean, ha, Tom Carver. I mean you're a fool if you believe any of that."